Welcome back to the Brexit Brits Abroad podcast. I'm Dr. Michala Benson, a reader in sociology at Goldsmiths, University of London, and the research lead for a UK and a Changing Europe project that's all about what Brexit means for British citizens living in the EU27. Today is episode number 30, and I asked Katie Higgins, who you may remember came to interview me about my research with British people living in France last summer. I asked Katie to come and have a chat with me about the findings of the survey that she ran last summer that was intended to collect the responses of British migrants living in other EU member states to the referendum. And it was focused really around questions of national identity and belonging, and particularly oriented towards garnering a sense of the emotional responses that people had. So looking at national identity and belonging through those very emotional responses that some people expressed towards Brexit. Katie, if you remember, has a PhD from the University of Sussex in geography, and she's currently the Urban Studies Foundation Fellow based at the University of Sheffield. Well, when we spoke last year, Katie was in the throes of running that survey. She's had an opportunity in the intervening year to conduct some analysis on those survey results. It was 909 results. It's a lot of survey responses to go through. And to write something about this, she's just published a paper in the journal Area, and I think that this has a title that you will be able to relate to. The title is I'm Embarrassed to be British, British Migrants Living in Other European Countries Respond to Brexit. And that work she's also written about for an article in The Conversation, and you can find the links to both those pieces on the website. I wanted to bring her in to chat with me about the paper, and particularly the kind of questions of Britishness and belonging that she's interrogating through her argument. In particular, we're going to focus on this idea of a bad Britain discourse, and we'll talk to you a little bit more about what that is, as well as this idea that I think I'm trying to tease out through our discussion, which is about a bad British discourse. I should just say that we recorded this episode in my flat during a thunderstorm, and our lovely producer Emma has tried her best to take out quite a lot of that background noise, but there might be the occasional rumble of thunder going on in the background. I should just say it was torrential rain when we were recording, which was just my luck. But just bear with us through that. I started by asking Katie if she could tell me a little bit more about the survey that she ran.
It ran for 1 week, and almost 1,000 people replying is quite unusual for a survey. And I think it showed a real concern about the result and what that meant for them, and also a desire to have their opinions heard, to be part of this conversation, not to be forgotten in the referendum and its outcomes.
Already the speed with which people replied starts to tell us a little bit about the strength of feeling that British populations, or some portions of the British population who live in the EU, felt about the referendum and its outcome. And I think that that's quite a major theme in the paper that you pull out. Perhaps you want to tell us a bit more about that.
Sure. So as I was reading through the responses received for the survey, I was struck by the emotion in a lot of people's words and in the text. And there was a wide spectrum of emotions: hope, indifference, anger. But largely, what was especially prominent was a sense of shame and also loss. I have a couple of quotes here that I can use to illustrate some of those emotions. So one British woman in her 50s, who'd been living in Greece for 11 years, said, "I'm ashamed of being British, given the xenophobia and racism that has been unleashed by the referendum. This is not who I am." And then in terms of loss and dislocation, people use dramatic language. There was this real visceral sense of something that had been taken from them, perhaps. A man in his 20s, who had been living in Spain for less than a year, said, "I feel like the country I belong to has gone. Call me dramatic, but the referendum vote was a real kick in the gut. I feel as though mean-spirited people have robbed me of my country and my future. England isn't the country I always thought it was." So it's worth mentioning here he uses England rather than British, and I've used British as a shorthand, but of course there are regional, national and supranational identities that complicate that identity.
And by supranational identity, you're talking about the sense in which they felt European. And some of the people in the survey responded that they were European when you asked them what their national identity was. That's right, isn't it?
Yeah. When I asked people to take part, they selected a box identifying as a UK national. However, 10% of respondents selected other and wrote European. So this starts to show some of the strength of feeling, not only about the loss of what they thought British meant, Britishness and the UK, but also a loss of their European identity as well, which perhaps they might have thought as existing alongside their Britishness, but now that had been challenged.
Absolutely. That's certainly something that's worth reflecting on a little further, perhaps at a later date, because I know that's not what this particular paper's about. This particular paper talks specifically about questions of Britishness, Britain, and kind of belonging, but also locates that within a broader framework of thinking about a population that self-identifies as white and how we might understand that through their reactions to the referendum. And one of the things that you talk about really clearly is this bad Britain discourse. Perhaps you want to tell us a little bit about what you mean by the bad Britain discourse and how it was framed differently following the referendum to previous articulations of that discourse that we might be familiar with.
The bad Britain discourse originally was used by Karen O'Reilly to talk about the way that British migrants in Spain might talk about the UK as characterised by negative things such as bad weather, a lack of community, expensive, isolating and so on, whereas the way they would talk about Spain was largely positive, good weather, community, etc. What I found looking through the results was that that bad Britain discourse was being mobilised again, but the negative characteristics this time being highlighted were those of xenophobia, of insularity, incompetent politicians, and so on.
And that, of course, then frames what they think Brexit is as an event, doesn't it?
Yeah, I found a blog by Akugo Emajulu very helpful, where she talks about whiteness as a power relation that can mobilise innocence. And she reflects on Brexit and the response of shock and outrage at racism in the UK, and thinks critically about how that frames racism as extraordinary, as unusual in the context of the UK. And she talks a little about how we need to consider the wider history that contextualises Brexit. Racism isn't new in UK society. Also, we need to zoom out from thinking about the bad racist as an individual and think about how racism is systemic, it's structural. It's not to do with an individual, it's to do with how wider society enables racist outcomes.
I think that's really important in terms of thinking about the work that those bad Britain discourses do and don't do. And what you're saying, I think, is that what comes across through the particular emotions, the shock, the shame, the sense of loss, the depiction of Britain as suddenly becoming a racist place, is this idea that it is somehow an event that made Britain racist rather than Britain having been a racist place in the first place, or a place that can be characterised by racial inequalities and disadvantage. I think it's also interesting to think not just in terms of this bad Britain discourse, but I think there were particular figures as well that were mobilised when the survey respondents talked about how they felt about Brexit.
Yeah, something that came through in the responses was often when respondents talked about racists, they used language that sometimes explicitly, sometimes implicitly was classed. So there was the idea of uneducated, ignorant, racist individuals who are dragging the country backwards. And in this way, we can think about how racism is always located over there as, and often in, a white working class individual. And that might shield the speaker from thinking about their own implication in a broader structure which privileges whiteness.
I think that's really important. And it's really important that that figure that we see mobilised so frequently of the white working class Leave voter who is a racist is a stereotype that's doing work for particular populations in how they explain and rationalise Brexit, as well as how they also position themselves as somehow outside of the conditions that produce racialisation, essentially. So I think we've got this kind of bad Britain discourse and this bad British discourse. And I think it's really notable in the interviews that I've done that that bad British isn't always located in Britain either. It could be that figure that we see circulating through comments on social media repeatedly of a British person living overseas who voted to leave, living in Europe, who voted to leave. Because, of course, you know, that is also a figure that builds on a longer history of locating an other British abroad who doesn't hold the same values as some of the more liberal, tolerant, well-integrated, to their minds, British populations or British individuals that I've been talking to. I think there was something else as well, though, in the paper that you wanted to draw out, which was to do with what the effect of these, of the vote, and perhaps what the consequence of is of thinking with these kind of renewed bad Britain discourses in terms of how these British people think about their rights as British citizens, or not their rights, their political obligations as British citizens.
Yeah, again, perhaps unsurprisingly, because of the way that I contacted people through advocacy groups, they were sometimes a politicised group. So they would talk about how previously politics for them was showing up in the ballot box, but outside of that, it may not be a big part of their lives. Whereas now they were organising, meeting people, posting on social media, and a lot more invested, at least in terms of citizenship, in taking an active political role in the future of that.
And I think that's really something that resonates with me, from the research that I've been doing, that you suddenly see this understanding that, oh, actually, this does concern me. And this is something that I should have an opinion about, British politics more generally, not just the Brexit referendum, because it could impact on my life. That's one way of putting it. And I remember, this is quite a funny story, somebody said to me that she'd just got one of these Facebook would like to remind you things about something that she'd said 3 years earlier, so before the referendum, which was like something that she'd said in an outraged, kind of indignant tone, oh, I do wish people would stop posting about politics on Facebook. That's not what it's for. And then, of course, you know, fast forward 3 years and she's right in the thick of things, regularly posting on Facebook about how outrageous the Brexit vote is and how nobody's listening to the concerns of British citizens living abroad, how the vote needs to be annulled, all of these types of things. So I say it's rather a funny story, but it's a funny story that illustrates really, really clearly exactly those processes that you're talking about.
And what I'd like to end on in terms of quotes is to draw out some of the complexity and nuance of these survey responses. So Britishness and the British are incredibly diverse socially, politically, and so on. And for a significant minority in this group, there was some empathy for people who voted Leave. It wasn't just a stereotypical racist figure. They also talked about austerity and how they had some understanding that for groups who'd been marginalised up to now, they might want to vote for a real political change. So I have a quote here from a woman in her 60s who'd been living in France for 15 years, but who'd lived in areas of the UK where a majority voted to leave the EU. She said, "I don't condemn those whose lives were badly affected by austerity." And I'm going to go on with her quote because it brings out some more details. "Some of my feelings of being born into a reasonably fair-minded, tolerant and charitable society have been rocked. Perhaps those feelings were based on myths, and the truth is that the UK society is no better than many others. And it is necessary to understand each other's positions, to listen with some humility, and to work and fight for the future of the young of the UK, the EU, and the rest of the world." So there's a sense of dislocation about what they thought Britishness meant, a new idea of the social divisions that characterise the UK, but also that real politicised sense of wanting to be involved in the conversations about what the UK, the EU and citizenship means.
So a real sense of social justice starting to emerge, almost like an awakening that social justice is actually something that we actually actively need to be involved in. But what particularly struck me in that quotation, which I think would be a useful thing to point to, is the fact that quite often there has been, unfortunately, a suggestion that these British populations who live abroad, who have variously been characterised in the British press and elsewhere as traitors, as well as, you know, and if you make the mistake of looking at some of the commentary on some of the articles about them, you will see people saying, well, of course they wanted to remain. You know, it's in their self-interest to do that. That's not what that quotation says. What that quotation says is she's intimately concerned about the UK, not just from her point of view, but about what it means for other people. And I think that's really important to take away, that some of this political activism, some of this re-engagement with British politics isn't about self-interest. It's about making Britain a better place or a better society for people. And I think that that gets very easily overlooked in some of the discussions that go on more widely.
Absolutely.
So I think that's probably a really good note to end on. Thank you very much, Katie.
Thanks for having me on.
You've been listening to the Brexit Brits Abroad podcast, hosted by me, Dr. Mikola Benson, and produced by Emma Halton at Art of Podcast. The series is part of a UK and a Changing Europe-funded research project, Brexit Brits Abroad, that's all about what Brexit means for UK citizens living in the EU 27. We're really keen to hear from you about the issues and concerns we address in the programme, so please do get in touch with any thoughts, queries and questions. You can find our contact details on our webpage, Brexit Brits Abroad, or get in touch via social media. We're on Twitter at BrexpatsEU, and we have a Facebook page, Brexit Brits Abroad. Finally, in case you're not already subscribed to the podcast, you can do so on both iTunes and Google Podcasts. Thank you for listening, and I'll be back in a couple of weeks with the next episode.